Hello and welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and give us a follow on Twitter at OTGBasketball. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Harris Wishard and OTG's own, Teo Salon. What's up, guys?
What's up? How's it going?
What's up, Nick? Great to be back. You know, we're closing in on the stretch run here and playoffs approaching, so good to be back.
It's good to have you back, Harris. Harris was out Saturday. But we're ready to cook right now. We got Teo's our Warriors guy, so we got plenty of Warrior stuff to talk about. Biggest disappointments this year, and we're going to start off with a Derrick Rose injury. So earlier this week, it was announced Derrick Rose out the rest of the season, torn meniscus. This is about his, I would say, fifth big injury in the last 6 years. So what are you guys' initial thoughts right off the top?
For the Knicks, like, this is pretty much cementing that the Phil Jackson stuff as pretty fucking messy. But the Derrick Rose thing, I never was a big fan of the pickup, but like at this point, the guy's career is in a rough spot for sure.
Yeah, one of our writers actually on OTG, Kyle Zawas, he just wrote something up on should Derrick Rose retire? You know, obviously he's constantly getting injured. I think he hasn't played 70 games or more since like 2011. So it's been pretty rough for him. He's had a lot of surgeries and his knees just aren't working. Personally, like from here on out, I just think D Rose probably isn't a starter. He's a bench player and he's somebody, you know, you can't necessarily rely on the whole season, but he could give you like a good scoring punch, maybe in like a six man type role. But it's hard to say if he would accept that type of role.
I was actually talking to my friend about this yesterday. I think he was right when he said, you know, when I brought up Brandon Roy, well, Rose's run was a little bit, more dominant, obviously have the MVP to his resume, but oh, how the mighty have fallen and how quickly that kind of got out of hand for him after the 2012 injury in the playoffs and it just quickly spiraled out of control. And it's crazy because like a guy like Roy also had that kind of success and we saw what injuries did to his career. So it's always unfortunate when, you know, when we're looking back at a guy's career 5-10 years down the road, we'll say what if, and he definitely falls under that category for me.
Do you guys think he should consider retirement or not so fast?
What I think is even weirder with him, like Brandon Roy at least was a great character guy, you know, and all of his teammates loved him. I feel like Derrick Rose isn't a good locker room presence. You know, I don't even see him bringing like a positive attitude to a team's bench, even if he is a bench player. And as your point guard, like you have to be the guy who's setting a tone for the team. You have to be getting the offense initiated. You have to get everybody involved. And, you know, he said this year, he doesn't really care about the triangle. He had that game where he missed it and didn't tell his teammates, you know, like
this is near.
Yeah.
And the court case, like it just, he seems like an awkward guy. And I don't know if he's not contributing on the court because of the knees, then I don't even know if I want him in my locker room, you know?
Yeah, and that's a good point you brought up because last year that's kind of one of the reasons they got him out of Chicago because him and Joakim Noah, Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah didn't want to give up that leadership role to Jimmy Butler, and they kind of gave him a difficult time about being the leader in Chicago even though he was obviously the best player there. So I always thought it was kind of a bad move from the Knicks' perspective. That's not somebody you want to bring around Porzingis.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'll contemplate retirement. I think this was a meniscus. I know a lot of people that have had that. Obviously, it's different because of his knee past and his knee injuries and everything that's accumulated for him. But, I mean, maybe a potential career overseas, maybe down the road at some point. But I think he'll be in the NBA for the next, at least the foreseeable future and obviously take a lesser role, maybe for a contender at some point.
What do you expect to see with him? You know, obviously he's a free agent this year. What do you expect to see with him? What kind of contract? What team is going to be interested in him? And what type of role do you think they'll bring him in as?
I wouldn't be surprised. Like, if Deron Williams wasn't on the Cavs right now, I could see LeBron making Derrick Rose work out for him. But one place he could go is the Clippers. You know, like, Austin Rivers is fun and all, but he could slide into the two-guard role. And with Derrick Rose's knees and Chris Paul's hand, you got about like a full point guard there. So I can see that working.
Harris, what about you?
Yeah, I like the Clippers. I like what Teo just said about the Clippers. I think it would just have to be a contender at this juncture of his career. He's a it might say 28 on his birth certificate, but it feels like 32 or 33. Yeah.
And the one thing that hurts Rose is he's not a very good 3-point shooter. I think this year he's shooting in the 20s from 3-point land. So,
oh gosh,
it's tough to fit in the NBA when, especially, you know, at the point guard position, something we've talked about a lot on the show, you know, your point guard needs to be able to shoot in most cases.
Yeah. I think we can agree that he's definitely not going to be on the Knicks next year.
Like, but the funny thing is, Jeff Hornacek said this week that they're definitely going to take a look at bringing him back.
What? I don't understand that. Like, they're also probably going to draft a point guard. You know, like, that's their biggest need right now, is they want to try and get a young point guard. And if you do get a young guy, like, let's say Lonzo Ball or, like, any of the Kentucky guys, you're not going to want him – you're not going to want them learning from Derrick Rose. You know, like, he's not really a guy who's going to teach them the ins and outs of an NBA offense.
Yeah, we'll kind of get an idea of, like, how stupid Phil Jackson really is as a president if he brings him back.
Yeah.
I mean, what the Knicks really need to do, not to make this a Knicks podcast, but, you know, they need to rebuild. And if they try to, like, add pieces this summer and compete, it'll just kind of tell you everything you need to know in that situation.
Yeah.
But let's talk about a team that's actually competing, and that's the Warriors. You know, they're looking like the best team in the league, favorites to win the championship. And then, they're probably going to get back the second-best player in the NBA this weekend, Kevin Durant. And, you know, Kevin Durant's averaging around 25 this season, shooting over 50%, and I think around 2 turnovers a game. So efficient numbers. He's been playing better defense, better as an all-around player. What do you expect when KD returns?
Well, right now we're not even calling them the Warriors. We're calling them the Golden State Toaster Boys, because after that Klay signing, they've really lit it up. Like, worst comes to worst, KD comes back and he's a little slow because of the injury, and the Warriors just use him as like a Kyle Korver spot up shooter, you know. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's supposed to come back this weekend, and I think, you know, what Draymond said is pretty telling. Dray said, we don't need him to fit in. We need him to stand out. So I think he's going to get back and just, you know, they're going to try and get him his ISOs and try and get him aggressive early. And so we'll see how he starts playing, but it looks pretty good right now.
And the sad thing is Kevin Durant at 75% is better than a majority of the players in the NBA. So it's kind of just crazy to think about. Harris, what do you think?
You know, people are concerned about, you know, could Durant coming back at this time when the team's playing well. I'm not going to, you know, really buy into that much. I know it took them a little bit early in the year, but definitely not as long as you would think. I mean, would they start 20 and 3? So there wasn't like a period where you thought that, you know, as the chemistry would take a certain amount of time, and it really didn't take that amount of time. So I'm not really that concerned about that. You know, I talk about the MVP Steph a lot on the show, and you know, what kind of effort we're going to see from him, what kind of production we're going to see from him, and him and Durant balancing out the offensive end, which I think is, I wouldn't say an issue, but I think it's something, you know, they have to continue, that it's a continuing feel out period, especially when he's been out for 12, 15 games.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about the Warriors that they're doing in the stretch of their 12-game winning streak isn't just what they're doing on offense. It's what they're doing on defense. And Kevin Durant's been having a pretty good defensive season for them, probably one of his best defensive seasons as a pro. So getting him back, I think, helps them in that aspect. Gives them another big body, too. You know, we do forget that Kevin Durant's almost 7 feet tall. So I'm not concerned about getting him back. I'd be worried if I was the rest of the NBA. Like, I just think it's crazy how good the Warriors are going to be going into the postseason. The last 2 years, I don't think they were fully in stride going to the postseason. This year, it feels like they're going to hit their stride, getting back one of their best players. And, I mean, we saw Klay and Curry both already have their cold stretch. And like you said, Harris, Curry's coming in that MVP-type form where he's just splashing from everywhere on the court. It's just like, I mean, I don't know how anybody really stands a chance against him, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's like you touch on it. Like, that's the big concern that a lot of people have, is that, you know, when he comes back, that's going to take up some shots, and then Steph and Klay might have trouble getting it going. Because it is true, earlier in the year, like, there were some growing pains, and when KD ISO'd sometimes, yeah, there was even one moment where Draymond was mad at him for not passing it to Steph, and there were random pieces of drama. But I mean, these guys are professionals, and he's been on the bench watching Klay and Steph light it up. So I think he's going to let them get their shots going and then take his looks. What I'm actually hoping that they do is I would love to see that lineup with JaVale at the 5, KD at the 4, the 3, and Dre at the other with Steph and Klay. Because in that lineup, you can actually even post up KD against a smaller dude and work the other three on the outside. And I think actually, like, in terms of box plus minus, that, or maybe it's net rating, I forget which one, but that's the, like, best lineup, the best five in the league when they're playing together. So I could see that working. And I think just defensively, that's going to be KD's biggest impact, is just straight off the bat when he comes back. Like, that's a, he is pretty much a 7-footer. So you get that length, and he's almost like a Serge Ibaka, just blocking shots down there.
Yeah, and he's grabbing, I think, around 7 rebounds a game this year. So you're getting that. And I think you guys mentioned, you know, he's been sitting on the bench, and Steph and Clay have been heating it up. You could probably say him, his assist numbers maybe step up a little bit. You know, maybe get, take on a facilitating role a little bit more real.
Not for nothing, JaVale McGee's actually been pretty good. I know they don't ask a ton from him. Like Tao just said, that lineup is
– Tao wrote a great article on JaVale McGee as well. I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, thank you. No, I think JaVale's actually really key to this Warriors team, especially against the Cavs. You know, like, against other teams, they can get by on, you know, just their talent alone. But when you really have to start working your matchups in the postseason, JaVale is, I think, going to end up being a really big piece, because, like, those 15 minutes that he plays here and there, those are really important minutes, you know. And his vertical spacing is ridiculous. They don't really have a guy who provides that sort of spacing, you know, where they can throw lobs up top. And his, like, he catches pretty much everything. And, you know, he might be over-eager for blocks on defense, but he is still probably the best rim protector on that team, aside from Draymond Green, who just gets it through, you know, hustle. But JaVale can really get up there.
Yeah, no, and his length, you know, like you said, he kind of finishes almost any oop. I saw, like, a quote from him. He's like, yeah, I'll never complain about them throwing a bad oop, because then they'll stop throwing them. So yeah. he's always trying to throw them down. But talking about the Warriors a little more, like, who do you think has been kind of flying under the radar? Do you think that's JaVale McGee, Andre Iguodala, maybe the signing of Matt Barnes? What do you think's been that underrated move?
I'll go with somebody who's even under all of those guys. I'll go Ian Clark. Because, I mean, I really like him. I've liked him for this year, last year. When he plays well, he's one of the most efficient guards. You know, like, I'm pretty sure he's still shooting over 50% this year. And as a point guard slash shooting guard, that's very tough to do, you know, and he's not taking very easy shots. But when he's on, like, the Warriors are tough, because I think they've suffered in the past when Leandro Barbosa was the number one, like, the bench scoring option. You know, and that's because he's a bit of an older guy, so he can't really get it going as well as a role player. But Ian Clark, when he's on, like, the guy can shoot, he can drive, his floater's pretty tough, and his touch is really up there. So I see him playing some important minutes.
Yeah, I've liked him as well. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he was a free agent this past offseason. I was kind of surprised that more teams didn't try to steal him away from the Warriors, because, you know, he could probably be a better player in a bigger role on another team. But what about you, Harris? Who do you think's kind of
flying?
Well,
I think you hit it on the head. It's more of a, I think, obvious choice how good Iguodala's been. Obviously, he's needed to play a more offensive-minded role with the absence of Durant. But from a leadership standpoint, I think everything that he brings to the table, they made it a point on the broadcast last night about his basketball IQ and what he's meant for the younger guys and guys coming into their prime. Obviously, we know about his MVP in the finals and, you know, and what he's meant to this organization. I think off the bench, it's going to be key. David West is another guy that I think is going to play a significant role off the bench for them, and how he's able to space the floor and that tough mindedness and fake tough guy, real tough guy argument came up the other night on the broadcast, and we know David West is about it. So I think of those two guys, I don't want to say flying under the radar, but I think guys that are going to play a major role in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. That's two veterans, you know, ready to step up for them as they're approaching the postseason. And like you said, I think David West does give them that toughness that they can use inside. You know, he's a big body, and he can kind of just give them that presence in there. But I also, like, I know I've touched on it before, I think the Matt Barnes signing was a pretty good move, too. He kind of fits their style, gives them the extra depth, and he gives them one of those, like, versatile three guys that can, you know, guard a few positions, play on the floor, hit the three, and kind of he'll be all over the place.
Yeah, I'm actually a big fan of Matt Barnes. You know, he was a big part of the We Believe Warriors, and just like the attitude he brings, you know, he gives another strong personality to the locker room to kind of balance out Draymond too. Cause like Steph and Clay are pretty quiet guys. KD is not a very social guy. So having Matt Barnes there really adds some grit. And David West, like I was pretty skeptical this year because, I mean, Mo Buckets was such a great power forward and such a great piece of the Warriors, and everybody loves him as the biggest shooting guard in the NBA. But
that's funny.
When David West came in, and I just didn't trust David West in the playoffs last year. He looked kind of slow, and I don't know, he wasn't getting it going. But this year, he's really shown me something. Like, he can shoot a little bit. His passing is really good, and he does have that, like, big man defensive presence. So I'm hoping, like, the rare minutes for him this year will mean that he's a little fresher for the playoffs.
Yeah, he has looked a lot better this year than compared to last season. Last season, he just kind of looked out of sorts with the Spurs, and it just, like, didn't look like he really filled the role that they were looking for, or he fit in that type of offense. So it's good to see him play well. I've always been a fan of David West as well. But let's talk about things that we're not a fan of this season, and that's biggest disappointments this season. Who has disappointed you guys this year?
I mean, we could just go back to the beginning and say Phil Jackson has been a pretty big disappointment.
Yeah, I think the easiest choice is going to be the Knicks. You know, Phil Jackson, the Knicks, the whole squad, Derrick Rose calling them a super team early in the year.
Oh, gosh.
Porzingis is – I mean, he had an okay year, but I think – I mean, I expected a little bit more from him this year. I don't know how you guys feel, but I expected a little more from Chris.
I think injuries have kind of hurt Porzingis, and maybe it's some questions about his, you know, his frame and putting on muscle is something he probably needs to focus on a little bit more. But I also think that the scheme of the team and the way it was set up from the front office to the coaching style and what they were doing every night, it didn't benefit Porzingis. And I said this at the start of the year, is like, you have this player, you have this unicorn, like, you need to surround him and you need to make sure that he's going to get the best out of his career, and you need to give him players that fit the style that he needs to play, not the triangle or whatever you want to do with your ego. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Melo's not a great fit for Kristaps, and it's a little awkward there. If I could go to a different disappointment, just a more recent one, I would say I'm disappointed in honor codes this year, because first the Wizards being upset at the Warriors taking a three, and then was it yesterday, the Raptors being upset with Lance Stephenson taking that layup, when meanwhile both of those teams have a history of doing the same thing. I think I'm just a little disappointed with the hypocrisy of these so-called honor codes.
Yeah, honestly, like, that whole thing with Lance last night, I was just like, why are they getting so mad? He had, like, a breakaway layup. Like, what do you want him to do? It's just, like, stop in the middle of the court and not score. Like,
yeah, exactly.
We're talking about a guy. First off, we all know Lance's personality and that he's going to take that layup.
The number one stat padder in the NBA.
Exactly. And, like, he doesn't get a lot of minutes. He's hardly played this year. Obviously, he's going to try to get a bucket if he can. Like, I don't know why they're just mad because they blew a lead in that game and they ended up losing to the Pacers, who and themselves have been a disappointment this year too.
Yeah. Do you see the video?
I can understand. I'm not going to say I can understand why they get that upset. Like, DeRozan and PJ Tucker, like, barking in his ear like that. There are guys in the league that would pull that out, Stephenson not being one of them. I think it's also, like you said, the situation. You know, you blew a 19-point lead to a team that, you know, supposedly better than. I could see, you know, the integrity, you know, argument could be made, but I don't think to get that upset. The McGee thing, at least the shot clock, they didn't want to – you know, we talked about this. They didn't want to pick up a turnover. I don't know if this was like showboaty on Stevenson's end, though. I didn't see that.
No, I don't think it was. Like, I think it was just Lance Stephenson being back in the NBA and wanting to get himself another bucket, get on the box score a little bit.
And I'll say he probably has helped the Pacers. I know our Pacer writer, Corey Waldron's, talked about it a little bit. He kind of gives them, not to say like Lance is an amazing, talented player, but he gives them that extra energy and edge off the bench, something that team doesn't really have. It doesn't have much like character and much toughness. So I think adding that player, I know Paul George has been pretty happy about it, but it'll be interesting to see if he can kind of help steady the ship and see the Pacers can hopefully make the playoffs. Because I know, talking disappointment, that's been a team that I've been disappointed with all season. What about you guys?
I was just going to say on the Raptors thing, do you guys see the video of Norman Powell doing the same thing with the windmill? Like, that's obviously way worse.
Yeah, for sure.
100% worse.
I mean, it's just like it's not that big a deal to get that upset about.
Yeah. But you were saying that the Pacers being disappointing?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have the Pacers as a top five, top six seed going into the season. And now they're barely hanging on for the eighth seed for the playoffs.
Yeah, it's been a little rough. I mean, in the beginning of the year, I was really hoping they were going to get Rudy Gay. Like, I really love the idea of Rudy Gay joining up and being at the three and letting Paul George play the two. But their pickups were a little strange, you know, like Jeff Teague wasn't a huge improvement over George Hill. And Al Jefferson, like, I mean, I love the guy, but I don't really know how legit he is anymore. You know,
yeah, like, he looks pretty bad this year. I know he started the season off okay, giving them like a little scoring punch, but as it progressed, he just looked worse and worse, and he's so slow defensively, and he can't, yeah. And he doesn't have an outside shot, so he doesn't really fit with what's going on in the NBA right now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you think might as well let the young guy, who was it, Miles Turner?
Yeah.
Might as well give him more minutes. And
that's pretty much what they're doing now. It's just because, like, Big Al isn't really doing it. And like you mentioned, Jeff Teague has kind of been – he's having a good year, but I think they might have expected even more from him. Harris, what about you? What are your thoughts on the Pacers?
I mean, it's pretty obvious to say they've underachieved. They'll probably sneak in, and we'll get that we'll probably get that series that Corey's been begging for, that Pacers-Cavaliers series in the first round.
Lance and LeBron.
Or potentially the Celtics-Pacers series. And speaking of the 1-2, don't talk to LeBron about regular season games, man. But he's been great NBA Finals, so make sure you don't talk to that man about regular season games, guys.
Yeah, no, you gotta make sure you don't do that.
It's all about the playoffs or LeBron.
Yeah, it's all about the playoffs. I think it really is. Yeah, I think I know you guys touched on this in an earlier pod. You were talking about regular season viewership going down. I feel like postseason viewership is probably going to go up this year because the playoffs are looking like they'll be really competitive.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, like I said, the Harris, I think this is going to be a really good first round. I think there's going to be plenty of matchups that we want to see. And it's not maybe necessarily – we'll see some matchups that might not be good talent-wise, but there'll be some drama on the court that'll make it even more interesting. Yeah. So I'm pumped going in the postseason. And, well, I guess, Tao, while you're on here, we'll get your picks for the finals.
Oh, for the finals? I mean, I think the biggest – if Andrew Bogut didn't get hurt, I would have the Cavs winning because, like, I have too much respect for Andrew Bogut as a defensive anchor and just as the best center on the court in a Warriors-Cavs matchup. But since he is out, I got to give it to the Dubs. I don't know how many games it'll take. It really depends on like how Kevin Durant is fitting back in, how his legs are looking. And, I mean, as we saw last year, like, playoff defense is very different from regular season defense. So right now it looks like Kyrie and Kevin Love wouldn't be able to hang with the Warriors and play enough defense. But last year we saw Kevin Love lock up Steph on the perimeter, you know? So it's hard to really say until we get into the postseason what that defense is looking like. So it could be a much closer series, but I'm going to give it to the Dubs.
Yeah, I'll say I'm just not going to say anything, but I'll give my pick later on another episode, and we'll get your MVP pick while you're on here.
Oh, one thing that's kind of funny is I know you guys mentioned in an earlier pod how the viewership for the Rockets-Thunder game is like, what was it, the worst of the year?
Yep.
I think that's pretty crazy that the like two of the top MVP candidates faced off and nobody wanted to watch it, and I think that says a lot about Russ's team. So, I mean, I would give the MVP to James Harden. I think it's just been too ridiculous of a year. You know, he's improved so much. The team has improved so much. And, like, some of those stat lines are just absurd. And so, like, the triple doubles are insane. And, like, you know, Russ is obviously a monster. But I got to go with James Harden for it.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a close race. I don't want to give my pick because I know that, like, somebody can have a game in one of these last four that might sway my opinion. So
in the past, it's been announced before the playoffs or like during the first round. Now we won't know until June 26th.
Wow.
That's pretty weird.
Yeah. So now, I mean, I think the voting is still like due by a certain time.
Yeah. It's probably due by the end of the season. Like at the end of the
I don't think season. Like the playoffs are because like what if the Thunder go in and like crush the Rockets? Like, I don't think that's going to sway anybody's vote one way or the other. But I just know there's, for the first time this year, there's an award show on June 26th that's revealing all the postseason, or the regular season awards.
That's pretty interesting.
I mean, yeah. I guess that makes sense because they're trying to get people to actually watch the award show. I remember they had it last time and not many people watched. So maybe they're trying to like build some hype around that. I know the NFL has an award show where they announce all their stuff. So maybe they're trying to like copy them a little bit. But we got to shout out Russ real quick for hitting 41 triple doubles on the season, tying Oscar Robertson.
So insane.
What was the over under you asked earlier in the year, Nick, like 20 something?
I think I said 25, and we were all like, I thought over for sure, but I didn't think he would get over by this amount. I thought maybe he'd hit 30, but hitting 41.
No, it's absolutely ridiculous. Like, that guy is just such an athletic beast, and he just works so hard. Like, of course your jump shots aren't going to be falling at the end of a game when you've been jumping and running as much as he has.
Yeah, he's like full turbo button all the time. Like, he doesn't even make sense in 2K. Like, they couldn't even really make his player correct because he just wouldn't run out of turbo.
Yeah.
Well, I was the one that when I played 2K, I got a sub quickly because my, you know, you run the stamina down quickly when you hold the right trigger. But with him, it's almost like the unlimited right trigger.
Yeah, no, that does not come down. He has no Gatorade cup.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Yeah.
I got to give one more shout out. I got to give a shout out to my Nets who dropped 141 last night. Second time this year they dropped over 140 points.
The monsters.
I'm pretty happy with the way they've been playing lately. Three-game winning streak. I can end the season on a happy note.
Nah, man, they look good. That team is fun. I like Caris LeVert a lot. Rondé's obviously has a lot of potential. Like, no, that's a cool team.
I love Caris. I definitely think very highly of him. I think, you know, this is just the beginning for that kid.
Yeah, it's also I'm a little sad, but Brook Lopez has officially become the biggest shooting guard in the NBA. He's taken the mantle from Maurice Spates.
Yeah, no, Brook has been lethal from three, and it's not just like set up threes. Like, he's stepping back, he's fading away, he's coming off picks. I'm just like, who is this 7-footer?
Yeah, no, he's making a lot of new bad pickup ball players.
That's very true.
Yeah.
We talked about that when Steph Curry, you know, became Steph Curry. Everybody just wanted to shoot threes, and people were talking about how it was ruining youth basketball.
But no, Brook is ruining all youth big men forever.
He came into this year, I think, on like
31 or 33 threes on the season, on the year, as career.
Yeah, he only took like, yeah. And the first like 6 years of his career, he was like 0 for 1, 0 for 1, 0 for 2, 0 for 1.
And he's always had like a long mid-range game, but I never thought he'd be this great of a three-point shooter. I saw a stat that he's only 19 threes away from tying Dirk for the most three-pointers by a 7-footer in a season.
It's absurd. The confidence is really out there.
He's made 132 this year.
Yeah, so he's no joke from three. And I mean, it kind of helps the Nets because that kind of fits with the new the NBA. And like, you know, his last few coaches had problems with him shooting regular jump shots in general. I think it says a lot about Kenny Atkinson. I'm definitely a big fan of him.
Kenny's great. Also, he's such like a New York guy too.
Mm. He embraces it too. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. No, also like shout out to Brooke for having those blocks the other day. I was so surprised. That won me like a fantasy basketball league.
Yeah, I think we played a game earlier in the season on the show, and it was like who had the most blocks in the season so far, and it was Robin and Brooke both tied for eight in a game. I think Rudy Gobert has got that high so far since then, but it's pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah.
But that wraps it up. So thank you guys. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll catch you this weekend.
Yeah, thanks for it. It was a good time.
Thanks for coming on, Tao, and enjoy the rest of the games this week, guys, and get ready for that postseason.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, let's check out Cavs Celtics.